if we want to overcome the darkness in our lives, the darkness that creeps in, the things that we struggle with, the things that are hard for us, we have to be willing to do something, to change something, to try something different.
And I'm convinced that the human spirit was not designed to simply maintain normal. Somewhere along the line, we forget that our job wasn't to maintain normal. Our job was to step into an unprecedented future where God continually presses us into what's next.
God will never ask you to respond to a call that doesn't already speak to the best part of you, the part of you that was designed for greatness, that deep down knows that there is something more.
Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. I hope that you enjoy this week's talk and want to invite you to join us live at 10 a.m. at the Glasshouse Concert Hall in beautiful downtown Pomona. Or you can join the conversation at www.humanitychurch.com. You can also download the Humanity Church app on iTunes or Android and keep up with the conversation and community there. If you would like to financially support this podcast and the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the one word Humanity Church to 77977 or check out the giving option on the app. Enjoy this week's talk. Welcome to Humanity, everyone. God, thank you for today. Thank you for this moment that we get to be together. Thank you for the gift of community and life and joy. And we ask that this morning your presence would be just moving among us as we encounter you today. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. We've been in this conversation for the last couple weeks called Heaven Meets Earth. And if you know anything about me, if you've been around Humanity for a while, I don't like talking about heaven. I know you're not supposed to say that as a pastor, but I just think it's an overdone conversation, and I feel like it's really weird at times. It almost feels like most people who are obsessed with heaven feels like almost like they're obsessed with death, right? Because it's almost like no one gives like talks on coffins or, you know, or gravestones. It feels this like this odd longing for this afterlife that's out there. And so rather than resisting the conversation, I just decided that I would own it with us and our community and our voice, and taking a look at what it looks like for heaven to meet earth, and going through this conversation from the very beginning of the scriptures all the way to the end. And if you've missed the first two installments of this series, I really encourage you to listen to the podcast, because it really is designed to be a complete narrative of what it looks like to engage heaven from the very beginning all the way to the end of the story. And it's fascinating that from the beginning of time, humanity has been obsessed with the afterlife, that humanity has been creating stories about what happens after we die, where we go, what happens, whether it's nirvana or purgatory or reincarnation or heaven. We have all of these conversations about the afterlife because we're obsessed with this. And of course, the narrative in the scriptures talks about this place called heaven that we get to be a part of after this life. And then it also, there's this fascination with the actual physical heavens, right? From the beginning of time, humanity has looked up at the sky and been fascinated by the moon and the stars and by space and what takes place out there. In fact, from the beginning of time, before there was telescopes and modern science that informs us that those lights out there are actually just big burning balls of gas, They were ancestors, or they were lights that were poked into the blanket covering the sky. And the skies often represented something very mystical, something unknown, something spiritual. And so it's perfect that the same word for heaven is also the same word that we use to describe the skies in the scriptures, which is the Hebrew word shamayim, which that word literally translates skies, but it also translates to the realm in which God reigns, the space in which God moves and rules and reigns in that space. And so it's fascinating that those two are interconnected with one another. In fact, the very beginning of the scriptures, Genesis 1:1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens, the shamayim, and the earth." And then he goes on to bring his shamayim, his rule over the earth that he had just created. See, when God set up this whole mess, he wasn't intending to have heaven and earth be separate entities. That when he created all of this, that heaven and earth were designed to be connected with one another. That he created earth as a physical platform to bring his heaven onto, his shamayim, his rule, his authority, his reign over this place. And so God intended that when we would think of heaven, that it would look a lot like earth.
in its most beautiful form available to us. See, I often think that Christians may be a little disappointed when they get to heaven, because I think after they die, they might look around and go, wait a minute, this feels a lot like where I just came from, right? I worked my whole life to get here. And really, I believe that once we die and when this whole thing finishes, we will, for those of us who are connected to Jesus, find ourselves in a space called heaven. It will just look a lot like this earth, with the injustice removed and the darkness removed and the chaos and the brokenness and the hopeless removed, and living at the peak of joy and peace and freedom and love here and now. And see, God creates humanity to be his representative of heaven everywhere that we go. The scriptures say that we were made in his image and that he gives us everything on earth to rule and reign over. So we get to be these little representatives of heaven, that everywhere we go, we might represent him as we're connected to him. But the problem is that we talked about last week, that Juan so eloquently brought, is that humanity decided that they were going to rebel against heaven, against the reign and rule of God, and they decided that they would take charge and rule themselves over this place called earth by disobeying the one instruction that God gave them, right? They had one job, right? And they blew it. He said, you can eat of anything in this garden. Everything's yours. Rule over everything. This one tree, don't eat it. And of course, what do they do? If you have a toddler, you know exactly what they're going to do, right? They ate the apple, and everything split from that moment. That this plan for having heaven and earth in the same location, in the same place, in the same moment, now divided into two separate entities. And we're left with this struggle between heaven and earth, the physical and the spiritual, the kingdom of here and now, of darkness and hopelessness and the brokenness that's so prevalent in the human condition, and this possibility for freedom and beauty and life and light. See, here's the problem. You can either have control or you can have heaven, one of those two. But you can't have them both. You can either decide to grab control of your life, or you can have heaven, but you can't have both of them because they are in direct conflict with one another. But the second that you release control and step into heaven, you'll actually find yourself in a space of peace where control isn't necessarily something that you long for or need, because there is a God who is in control of something so much bigger. And so really, the entire narrative of the scriptures has been God attempting to bridge this great divide that has taken place between earth and heaven, and moving us back to the place where heaven touched down on earth and we could be there. And we wrestle with that tension. We wrestle with the injustice. We wrestle with the suffering. We wrestle with the prejudice. We wrestle with the brokenness and the death. And the future at times seems bleak. But God's always in the act of moving things towards redemption. In fact, I love that in Genesis chapter 12, starting in verse 1, after this great divide and after chaos has ensued on earth, this place that was designed to contain heaven, God comes to this man by the name of Abram. And he has this conversation with him in Genesis chapter 12, starting in verse 1. If you want to turn there with me, if you need a copy of the scriptures, you can just raise your hand. We'd love to give you a Bible. If you don't have a Bible, raise your hand. We love giving away Bibles here so you can take it home. If you need one, just raise your hand and we'll get you one. But in Genesis 12, 1, God comes to Abram and he says this. He says, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. And I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the people on the earth will be blessed through you. See, God, after all of this mess that has taken place, after Adam and Eve decided that they were going to take control, after this whole situation with this Tower of Babel that's built, all of this mess that's taken place, God now steps down into relationship with a man named Abram, and he says, I'm choosing you. We're going to do a little do-over here. And it's interesting that God doesn't decide to completely wipe out humanity. He almost did that a little bit with Noah. But he doesn't decide to completely wipe out humanity. He saves a few, and he says, all right, we're starting over. We're going to do this human experiment, if you will, to see if we can actually move back to Eden, to see if we can actually get back to the place where heaven and earth could move with one another. And he chooses Abraham, and God chooses Abraham to continue creating heaven on earth. See, he doesn't say, I choose you so that you'll be blessed, period. He says, I'm choosing you to bless you so that you can bless everyone else. I'm choosing to protect you so that you can then protect everyone else. I'm choosing to give everything I have to you so that you can be the vehicle through which I bring heaven down to earth. And we will see this over and over and over again in the scriptures, that God is only interested in using humanity to bring heaven to earth. That he's not going to come down in a ball of light. He's not going to come down and zap us. There's not going to be some out-of-body experience. That heaven meets earth through people that are connected to heaven. And everywhere they go, they bring that with them. So he starts with Abraham, and he promises him, hey, you're going to be the family. You're the chosen one. You're the lineage that I'm going to work through. And Abraham has a son named Isaac, and Isaac has a son named Jacob. And Jacob is where we pick up the story with Abraham's grandson. And in Genesis chapter 28, if you guys would move there with me, Genesis chapter 28, starting in verse 11, Jacob has this experience with God and with heaven. And in Genesis 28, verse 11, it says, when he reached a certain place, Jacob, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Good reason to stop for the night, right? Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending on it, and there above it stood the Lord. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you were lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and the south, and all people on the earth will be blessed through you, you and your offspring. Sound familiar, right? I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And when Jacob woke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set up a pillar and poured oil on it. And he called the place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. And Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I may return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you back a tenth of all of that. Have you ever been in a place where you're desperate for God to show up in some way, shape, or form? Yeah, I find myself there quite often. And it's interesting because I find that most people have their first initial one-on-one or personal connection with God attempting to find him in a moment of crisis. In fact, there's very few times where people just enjoying life and have this epiphany, maybe I should find God, right? Usually it's when crisis hits, someone dies, money starts running out, circumstances come at us, we're desperate emotionally for some type of healing or transformation, and so we go on this spiritual journey to find God. And oftentimes, our quest to find God is almost always connected in some way, shape, or form to some crisis internally that we're having about the world around us. And in those moments, if you've ever been there, you know that you'll do almost anything to connect to God. In fact, humanity over the years has done so much to attempt to connect to God in those moments of crisis, whether it's going to a sacred space and lighting a candle, whether it's chanting a prayer over and over and over again, whether it's going to a sweat lodge or having some ayahuasca experience or going to Burning Man, whatever it may be, right? We're just like, how on earth can I connect to God in this moment? Because there's this crisis that's taking place here and now. And I don't know if you've ever been in that moment where you are so desperate for God to move, but I have found that in those moments, it's almost those moments where God seems the most quiet, which can be really annoying, isn't it? Well, when you're pleading and desperate for God to move, and then at times it feels like he's not that concerned, or maybe he's off doing something else, or he's not that interested in invading you with heaven in that exact moment that you need him there in that space, which is oftentimes very concerning on our end. When we're in a space of desperation, it seems like God is a little bit lax on that. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if our journey with God was more like a State Farm agent, you know? Like you could just be like a good neighbor, Jesus is there, right?
And in that moment, it'll just be like, oh gosh, here we are in the fight with my spouse again. Like a good neighbor, Jesus is there. Boom, right? Everything's going on. Or that bank account moment hits and you're like, all right, Jesus, hook it up. Like a good neighbor, boom. And he's like, here's a couple bucks, whatever it may be. It would be so nice if we had this just instant push button where God could show up in an instant and everything could be transformed. But that's not oftentimes how it works. See, I love that Jacob here is in the middle of this journey. We don't know where he's coming from, and we don't necessarily know where he's going to, but he's on this journey. And we don't even know where he is in the middle of this until the very end of the story. It just says that he's in a certain place. What does that even mean, right? It's not a notable place. He's not like, and then he came to the big city, or then he found himself in the beautiful desert. It just says he's just wandering along in life, and then he gets to this certain place, and because it's night, he decides to lay down, and he grabs a rock for a pillow, right? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not like a wilderness guy. I feel like if I was to go on one of those like naked and afraid experiences, I would probably die within about 2 hours or so. But I could imagine of all the things available to him, a rock seems rather odd for a pillow, right? But he grabs this rock and he lays his head down on it. And this is where God shows up for him, right? I mean, this really unusual, really ambiguous, uncomfortable situation that he finds himself here. And here is where God has an encounter with him. Here is where God shows up. There's no crisis. There's no need here in this moment for God to show up. There's not like something he's desperately longing for, but God shows up here in this really ambiguous situation. Isn't it annoying when God doesn't show up when we need him and then he shows up in some random moment? I mean, it would be nice if he picked his space. And I imagine Jacob's in this space, like, now you show up right here while I'm sleeping on a rock, you show up, right? See, here's the thing that I find is that God doesn't always show up when we're in crisis because he's not necessarily in crisis in those moments. That the moments that we feel like we're in the most crisis, God's actually not in that space. See, what we assess as like panic moments or moments to freak out or moments where everything is falling apart, those generally don't faze God. Those moments, generally, God's not in heaven going, oh no, what's happening? How are we going to fix this? I need to show up in a big way right now. Oftentimes, the moments where we're the most freaked out, God's actually the most calm. And he's the most unconcerned about the situation because he has a different perspective. However, God will interrupt you along the journey to have the most divine experiences with him in the most unexpected of moments. See, heaven doesn't just wait to invade your life when you have a crisis. And heaven also doesn't wait to invade your life when you show up in church. See, heaven will show up in the most unexplained, unnamed, at times uncomfortable situations if we're willing to be aware that heaven is actually invading us. If we're willing to live in this space of curiosity and wonderment and looking and wondering, like, what is happening about me that God is doing here in the moment? Because God doesn't show up for Jacob in this big moment. He shows up for him in an unnamed, uncomfortable situation where he doesn't actually need anything from God in that moment. And see, if you're willing to be aware, heaven will come crashing into your unnamed spaces. He will come crashing into those moments where you're doing the dishes. He will come crashing into those moments when you lay your head down on your pillow. He will come crashing into those moments where you're at work. He will come crashing into the most unexpected of places if you're willing to be aware of those moments. And it's interesting, the vision that God gives Jacob here in this moment. He gives him this vision of this stairway from earth going up into heaven. Now, we oftentimes refer to this moment as Jacob's ladder. How many of you have heard that phrase before, right? Jacob's ladder. There's like a toy that you can buy called Jacob's ladder. But really, this was not a ladder. This was a grandiose stone staircase that went from heaven up into earth. And if you listen to the series up until now, you know that there are so many allusions or so many illustrations of pointing to what a temple looked like in this modern time and how God actually wanted to interact with people. See, because when Jacob saw this grand stone staircase going up to heaven, what the readers at the time immediately would recognize is, oh, that's clearly a stairway to some type of temple. That's clearly a stairway to some type of a divine experience here in this moment. Except this temple is really interesting because normally those stairs were built so that God could descend down onto earth and make himself available to us humble peons right here at this place, right? But the fascinating thing is that this staircase started in heaven on earth and descended up into heaven here in this place. And this was where the Shemayim, the reign of God, was, that this staircase led to that space. And this staircase was busy. That it didn't just lead to a temple, but that it was a pathway. It says that people were coming and going, ascending and descending, that there was busyness taking place all around this staircase, both going up and coming down, doing this work here and now. Angels both going onto their mission and angels coming from their mission, those being sent out to engage humanity and those just coming back from engaging humanity. And there was this business taking place up and down this staircase here and that moments, which means that in heaven, there's a lot of business going on. See, I don't know if you ever had this image of what God looks like and what heaven looks like, if you were just to catch the first image in your head. But really what this informs us is that heaven looks a lot more like Wall Street. Not in the terms of buying stocks, but in the terms of energy and business, right? That God is not just seated on a throne, right? Just enjoying his time. That he is in the process of managing and engaging and sending out and bringing back all kinds of movement that's taking place here on this earth that's connected to the reign and the rule of God, that he is active and moving and interested in both coming and going from our lives, creating movement in who we are and what's around us. And for those of you who have heard this story before, you might be reading this like, so what? He saw a staircase. Awesome, right? Nothing really mystical happened at that moment. For others, you might be thinking, this is just a crazy dream, right? Let's psychoanalyze this. But in this moment, it was incredibly significant for the narrative of heaven meeting earth in this place. See, because this dream, after he sees this staircase, God starts speaking to him. And God starts speaking by reminding Jacob of his past. Don't you hate it when people start reminding you of where you came from? I mean, that's just annoying. Even if it's not even if people aren't just bringing up all your junk, I can't tell you how many times people have come up to me and I haven't seen them since I was a kid. They're like, I changed your diapers when you were little. And I'm like, that's weird. Please don't ever say that to me again, right? That's just bizarre. I am a 36-year-old man and I don't need to know that, right? Or there are people in my life, my grandfather and my father, that have come before me who have done very significant things in the world. And oftentimes, especially when I was in college or academic arenas or conversations around spirituality, all the time I had people come up to me, oh, you're Ralph Nabors' son. Have you ever had that? Like you're referred to by your parents' child and as if I had something to live up to or as if something I had to connect to. And there was always this connection to the past of what has been and bringing that up. See, for some of you, you know what that's like. But it's even worse when then people start bringing up all the things where you failed in your past, right? Oh, you remember that one time. Or when you're having conversations with your family and all of a sudden they bring up, yeah, well, you know, there was that one time you lied or there was that one time you cheated or was there was that other time that you deceived us or there was that other time that you betrayed. You can't be trusted 10 years later because of what you did 15 years ago, right? And so oftentimes your past will be brought up to shame you, to hold you back, to remind you of who you are and what's capable here and now in this space. But here's the thing, God will never ever bring up your past to shame you about your faithlessness. He will always bring it up to remind you of his faithfulness. He will always bring it up to remind you of how faithful he has been and how good he has been in the middle of it. It will never, ever be to shame you or to put you in your place or to remind you of what's possible in the future because of what's taken place in the past. And this is what God starts with. He says, you, Jacob, remember your grandfather Abraham and remember your father Isaac, and here I am with you. And he starts off this moment. See, it's one thing to believe that God isn't showing up in a crisis moment. Like, wow, where was God in that moment where I needed him? But it's another thing to believe that God has abandoned you completely. I've been in both places. It's one thing just to, man, God, you didn't show up in this moment. It's another thing to live in the belief that God has completely abandoned me and he has no interest of engaging with me again. Ever been there? Or maybe it's like a conversation of, you promised me, God. You said that this was going to happen, and it didn't happen. I had dreams for my life that were bigger than me, and they didn't turn out, or they're not turning out, or it's so much more of a struggle than you told me I would be. Or maybe there's something like, hey, you promised my grandfather, and you promised my father, and you had these promises that you laid out for people, and I can look back at the generations and see how faithless you've been. Where have you been? I know we're not supposed to have these conversations in church, but let's just be real. These are conversations that at times flood our thoughts. Where were you? And why haven't you been there when I needed you? And now here I am in a certain place. And now you decide to show up here and now in this moment for me. See, I think this at times is why we've settled for heaven being a one-day experience, not a here and now experience, because at times we just give up on the reality that heaven could actually be a possibility right here and now.
That's good.
And so, hey, at least second best is it's a nice retirement home when I'm done with this earth. Maybe God will show up then after I'm dead, as if God was more concerned about your afterlife than he was concerned about your life here and now. And we find ourselves in this place at times. And there have been stories of the generations of how God promised Abraham over and over and over again. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. You hear it over and over and over again. But here's Jacob looking back saying, nothing's really changed. The world looks like it did back with my grandfather. My family lineage looks the same. This promise that you have for me hasn't shown up. Where are you in the midst of all of this madness? See, and it's easy to look around at the landscape from that perspective and just believe God's lied to you. Or at best, he's tricked you in some way, shape, or form. And there's this desperation that comes up. About 3 years ago, I decided that I was going to plant grapes in my backyard. I know I've talked about the grapes before. They're very dear to my heart. And I planted the grapes 3 years ago thinking that we would like start a winery in our house or something. And then I find out later that it takes about 3 years for the grapes to grow, right? So here I am tending to the grapes, 3 years. Last year, grapes blooming everywhere. I mean, tons of grapes everywhere, all over this thing. 3 years later, I'm like, man, we're going to make some Cabernet here. It's going to be beautiful. We're going to sell it. And no, I was like, this is awesome. We have grapes in our backyard. This is insane. And then we had 118 degrees. And guess what? Those grapes turned to raisins. All of them, like instantly done. I was so mad. I'm like, 3 years in the making and it's gone in an instant. And so the vines shriveled and everything faded away. And if you've ever seen a grapevine like in the middle of winter, it just looks nasty. And I was tired of looking at it. Every time I looked at it, it just reminded me how angry I was at the grapes and the 118 degree weather. And so last November, I just decided that I was going to go out and prune the whole thing back. I had read that you're supposed to prune the vine every year, so I just went and started snipping away at it, and I'm thinking about like that verse, you're the vine, I'm the branches. I'm just clipping away. No, I'm not that spiritual, but I'm just clipping away at it, and I throw them all in the trash, and then when I get done, if you're like me, you know that this is the case. After I get done, I had this thought, maybe I should have read about trimming grapevines before I did it. So I went to the inexhaustible source of YouTube, and they said, never trim grapes in November. And I'm like, oh Lord, this is just my luck, right? They said, you will kill the vine, and it's not going to be good. And they said, trim it in January so that you can have new buds in March and April and things. I'm like, oh man, I just ruined 4 years of my life here in this moment. And so for the last few months, I have been anxiously waiting to see what's going to happen to this grapevine. Like, what's going to happen here, this hard work, and I've ruined it, and I put my hands on it, and it's a mess, and things aren't showing up, and I'm even, like, cutting into it, seeing if there's green on the inside and all this stuff, and everything that I'm cutting into, it's like dead wood. I'm like, oh, man, this is horrible. I mean, my life is easy, but if this is the worst problem. But we find ourselves there, and then I was in Grand Rapids last weekend, and I come home, and I'm out in the backyard, and things are beautiful coming home from -2 degree weather, and I look over at the grapevine, and there's a little leaf coming out of it. And I'm like, what is this magic? So I run up to it, and there's not just one leaf. There's like little buds all over the vines. And every day, if you've ever been a grape, they just start growing like crazy. And now there's just little leaves coming around everywhere. And I thought, oh, it's alive. It is alive. And I didn't know it up until now. In fact, I thought I had killed it. And now life is springing forth at springtime. And as I was reading this passage, I thought that's exactly what God does in our life, is that we think things have screwed up. We think he's abandoned us. We think everything's dead. And then in the moment, in just a moment, everything starts springing forth. Yeah. Yes, that he has been working under the surface, that he has been working in places that we cannot see and that we cannot understand, and in places that are impossible to see in that moment. And then all of a sudden, in the right moment, when God chooses, new life springs forth. There is this new bud of possibility. There is this new leaf that's coming forth that says, the hope is available that you thought was not available here in this moment. And God reminds Jacob here in this moment, I made a promise to your grandfather that I have not forgotten, and I have come to make that promise right and fulfill it right now. And this is the conversation that heaven starts to have with Jacob, saying, I haven't forgot the promise. I promised it to your grandfather, and I'm choosing you to fulfill it in this moment. And it's not even like, oh, right now I'm getting to it. It's, hey, I have been working in every single generation up until this point to get you to be here. I have been working in your life through all of those generations, and I'm going to give you a peek behind the scenes of what's actually been taking place all this while that you've been waiting. And see, this is a moment of God saying, I know you thought heaven has abandoned you. I know you thought heaven has not been there for you, but heaven has actually been working fervently this entire time on your behalf to get you to this moment where you can see the staircase between heaven and earth moving in your life. That he is at work in this place. See, when we recognize that heaven is meeting earth, in that moment, everything starts to change. Everything starts to shift. See, and I love it that at the end, we do find out that this certain place had a name, right? That it was called Luz. I imagine it was like, this is Hemet or Merino Valley, right? It's like, there's just this place, right? But now we find out it's Luz, right? And in this moment, Jacob, he takes his rock pillow, this rock that had just been sitting in the middle of this certain place, and he anoints it with oil, and he says, this is going to be a memorial to this moment where new life burst forth, where heaven invaded my life. And see, all throughout the life of the Israelites, they would create monuments out of stone, reminding them of the future that was available for them and where they had been so they could come back. Because how many of you get, we forget? We forget where God has shown up. And so he builds this monument right there, and he says, this pillow, this rock that turned into a pillow, will now be forever a memorial to God having heaven invade my earth in the most unexpected of situations. And then he changes the name of this place from Luz to Bethel, which means, the literally name of that means the house of God. Then he takes this certain place, and now it becomes known as Bethel, the house of God. And Bethel becomes one of the most significant places throughout all of the Old Testament, where God shows up time and time and time again there in that place. See, God is actually willing to take your insignificant and uncomfortable circumstances and situations and turn them into a memorial of how good and faithful he is. He's wanting to take all those certain places in your life and say, that place that you thought was just ordinary and dead, now it's called the house of worship. That circumstance that you thought was so uncomfortable and was really bizarre, I'm going to take that, and that will be a constant reminder of how good I've been. And so for generations, Bethel became the place where God met them in this place. And by the way, this just didn't happen like over time. I think we have this idea that God needs time and he needs space and we need to take baby steps, right? God just moved. Heaven moved. Heaven invaded. And everything changed in that moment. And see, when we find ourselves there, it also transforms who we are at our core. See, because just a few chapters later, Genesis, chapter 32, Jacob has this next interaction with God here in this moment. In Genesis chapter 32, starting in verse 22, it says, that night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, lots of business going on there, and his 11 sons. across the ford to Jacob. And after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched, and he wrestled with the man. And then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." And Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And the man asked, "What's your name?" And Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will be no longer Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." And Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." And he replied, "Why do you ask me my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw the face of God and my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat of the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because of the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. See, this is a moment that happens years later with Jacob. And once again, he finds himself changing the name of a place that he had found himself at. I'm sure this is getting very confusing for people, right? The place formerly known as Luz, now it's Bethel. This place was Peniel, now this. And he finds himself in this space of change. But Jacob wrestles with God. He wrestles with God near in that moment, because Jacob has touched heaven, and anytime heaven invades him now, he will not let it go. He is relentless in his pursuit and wrestling of heaven. So hard, he wrestles with heaven so hard that God literally has to dislocate his hip and say, "Let go, because you are too much right now here in this moment." See, because when you have experienced heaven, when heaven has invaded your life, you will become relentless in pursuing. You will become relentless because nothing else will satisfy. And see, this is one of the signs that heaven has touched your earth, is that all of your priorities change. Yeah. See, I mean, only a crazy person would wrestle with God in the middle of the night. And when God says, "Let me go," he says, "Heck no," right? Because every single one of his priorities change. How he spends his time, his resources, his energy, all of this shifts when heaven has touched your life, because nothing else will satisfy the human spirit like heaven invading your life.
Right.
Our family's crazy. We get a lot of stuff wrong. But the funny thing is, so many people come up to Marla and I at times, and well-meaning, feel free to keep doing this, but they're all, "I'm just concerned about you. And I'm just concerned about how you like your schedule and how things are with our lives. We're on the move. We're going." But here's the thing that I will tell you is, Marla and I have touched heaven. That we've experienced people healed in our living room. We've experienced marriages restored right in front of our face. We've experienced people find freedom from addictions instantaneously. And guess what? When you experience that, your life will be forever transformed. That your schedule will look different. That how you spend your money will look different. That how you spend your time, your energy, and resources will look different, because nothing else will satisfy. You have tasted the gateway drug, and now you have to have more. And trust me, like an addict, you will fiend for it, because nothing else will do that. And it may look a bit crazy, but your name will be changed in the process. Your name will be changed. See, it's easy to look at all these moments with all these guys, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We look at them as these greats of faith, right? I mean, these men were awesome. But reality was, these were some really messed up people. I mean, super screwed up. I mean, if you look at the story of Abraham, this guy was not like a super on the money guy. I mean, he finds himself at one point confronted by a king with his wife. And the king's like, "I want your wife." And he's like, "Oh, that's my sister. Feel free," right? Who does that, right? Who does that in this moment, right? Isaac finds himself doing the exact same thing in that moment. I mean, Abraham, he gets so worried about having a kid that he sleeps with his handmaiden to have a kid. They have this illegitimate kid and like sends them on their way. Who does that, right? These are not like the picture of God's chosen people. Jacob, his name literally means deceiver. I mean, could you imagine going, "Hi, I'm deceiver. Hi, I'm like, what would that look like for a job interview? I would, you know, hi, I'm deceiver. I'd love to work for you." But this, I mean, this is where they find themselves here in this place. And imagine all of the identity and the backstory to his family, right? It wasn't like, "We are the chosen ones," right? I mean, he's like, "We are the messed up ones. We are the dysfunctional. We are the broken. We are the broke. We are the crazy," right? Some of you know exactly what this is like. This is exactly what Easter will feel like for you, right? See, the question is, what names have you picked up along the way? What questions have you picked up along the way of life? Because some of you, like, legit have picked up names. I'm the one who has failed. I'm the one who's not enough. I'm the one who's always broke. I'm the one who's completely a mess. I'm the one who's overrun by anxiety. I'm the one who has the messed up past. If you only knew about my parents or my grandparents and the childhood that I have, we just pick up these names along the way, and these names form a concrete identity of who we are. And if all you have is earth, then those names will be tattooed on your soul. But see, the second that you step into heaven, everything shifts, because God chooses people who are broke and messed up and have crazy pasts and steps into those places to transform everything. And see, yes, God had been faithful through the generations of Abraham and Isaac, but what God is saying is this. He said, look, I know you can look back on your family history and say how crazy this is, but the fact of the matter is that I was at work in Jacob's life, or I was at work in Abraham's life, and I was at work in Isaac's life, and I was moving through those family generations so that I could get to you, so that your name should be changed from deceiver to Israel, which means God perseveres. See, because some of you, God is longing to change your name so that you no longer have to stay connected to the family legacy that has been holding on to you. And he says, I choose to change your name to Israel because I have persevered through you. And that everything would break through from that moment. See, for some of you, God has been working from generation to generation to generation to finally get to you, so that you could be the place where heaven meets earth for the future and move in your life. See, heaven will transform your scorched earth into Eden. It will transform your broken places into the garden. And then the last thing, when we go back to Bethel, after Jacob has this huge encounter with heaven, finally his perspective shifts. And the beautiful thing is that his perspective instantly shifts from scarcity to generosity. Instantly. See, because he recognizes that when heaven invades earth, when heaven invades your earth, you are now an heir to the riches of heaven. You are now an heir to everything that's available to you. See, he says, God, if you will be with me, and if you will keep me, and if you will protect me, which, by the way, those are all attributes of heaven, that God will be with you, that he will protect you, that he will keep you. You start to recognize, oh, heaven has actually been longing to provide for me this entire time. That heaven has actually been dying to invade my life so that I could have everything that I need. Marla and I have been watching this ridiculous television show over the last weekend where they're selling multi-million dollar houses on Sunset Strip. And I've been watching these people buy multi-million dollar houses thinking this is like a whole other pay grade, right? Because the crazy thing is they'll buy a $7 million house and they'll say, how much to move all those electrical lines over there so our view is unobscured? And they're like, you know, probably about $500,000. Great, throw that in. I don't even understand that, right? I can't even, that doesn't even compute in my mind. Because, see, there's something when you have access to resources that possibilities suddenly become not a big deal. And see, when you are connected to heaven, you recognize that all possibilities are on the table for you because you are connected to the resources of heaven, and that heaven has been provided. And I love that Jacob's immediate response, his instinct is he says, look, you have been giving to me, you've been providing on everything to me, so I will give. And specifically, he says, I will give you my resources. I will give you back a tenth of everything that you have given me. And this is like a knee-jerk reaction of his soul connecting to heaven. See, one of the signs that you have connected to heaven is that your soul just immediately says, I will give my resources back. I will give away the things that God has given to me. See, I like tangible measures for my spirituality, because how many of you get you lie to yourself, yeah, right? Yeah. I lie to myself all the time. And I'm like, I am such a loving person, right? I am so forgiving and blah, blah, blah. And at times it's absolutely true. But then there are things that show up with my kids, with my wife, with how I handle my resources, all kinds of things around me that are telling me otherwise, that are informing me that this might actually be the case. See, I can lie to myself and then I can notice, well, I'm dealing with a lot of physical stress right now, so something must be off. I just learned for me that if I go around the house and don't close drawers or don't close cabinets or leave things undone, leave my toothbrush on the counter and leave things slightly undone, there are a lot of things in my life that I'm just ignoring that I want to keep undone. And I just notice for physical markers to inform me of what's going on at a spiritual level in my life. See, and here's one marker that will tell you that heaven has touched your earth, is that you are compelled to give. Not just like, hey, I will, but you are compelled. See, because God didn't give Jacob a 5-point sermon about tithing. He didn't give him like, hey, let's go through FPU and like, let's get your finances together. He just instantly was like, everything, like a tenth immediately goes to you. And everything I have goes to thee. Because here's the two realities that will happen when heaven touches earth, is that you will recognize that you have been given so much by God, but you will also long to make temporary things like money eternal. You will. There will be something inside of you that says, I want to take everything here on this earth and move it into heaven. I want to take my home, and I want to take my kids, and I want to take my car, and I want to take everything around me, and I just want to usher it into heaven right here and now. And God uses this image to bring heaven down. It takes heart to give, but it also takes resources. See, sometimes I think we have this idea that, you know, resources don't really matter. Kind of like, that's the unspiritual thing over there. I don't care about money. God does, right? See, because here's the thing. What if this was a part of the plan the whole time? See, what if this was about God saying, I have been faithful and I will be faithful. And so I'm going to use you in two ways as my image bearer. You will bring my heart of love and of faith and of hope everywhere you go, and everywhere you touch, heaven will fall down. But then I'm going to give you resources to complete that mission. I'm going to give you everything you need to give away so that that could happen. See, if every single person that was connected to the movement of Jesus engaged in this space, there would be no need anywhere on the planet. But when heaven touches you, it will move you to that space. See, what I love about this moment is that God provides himself and he proves himself to be faithful. The question is, will we in response? When heaven meets us, will we just bask in the light of a new name and a new future and the exciting, exhilarating freedom that comes with being released from our past? Or will we step into the God-given mission that he has in front of us? See, the choice is yours. If you choose to not, you'll simply live a lesser life. But if you choose to step into this, not only will your life find itself moving at the pace of God, but you'll find the world around you transforming at an equal pace. But the choice is yours. Let's pray together. Jesus, I thank you that you show up in the most uncommon places, and that you take our uncertain places and you take the uncomfortable situations and you transform them into memorials and markers of who you are when heaven meets earth. And then you take all of our history, God, and you start showing us how you have been faithful through generation after generation after generation to move us to this place. Father, would you make us aware of heaven here and now? And this morning, if you're here and maybe you have not yet connected to Jesus, maybe this conversation is really intriguing. Maybe you're thinking to yourself, I would love to be disconnected from some of the past that I've come from. I would love to have a new start. I would love, like a grapevine, to have new life coming from me here in this moment. If this is you here today, heaven has come for you through Jesus. And it is completely available right here and right now. And so if that's you, if you're here this morning and you're just like, I'm ready to connect to Jesus for the first time, or maybe for the first time in a long time, I'm not talking about religion or rules or anything. I'm just talking about you connecting to heaven and Jesus here in this moment. If that's you, would you just look up at me right now? Because this is your moment. Awesome. Who else? Awesome. I see you. Yeah, who else? So this morning is like, I'm ready to connect to heaven. Awesome. I just want you to pray this prayer with me. Just say, dear Jesus, I give you my life. I know that you've died for me. And I know that you have made life available to me. So I give you my life, and I ask that heaven would come and invade mine right now. I make you Lord, and I give you everything. Would you come and change my name And would you come make everything new? We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen, amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's talk. Join us next week for a new conversation or download the Humanity Church app to continue interacting with the community at Humanity. Thanks and have a great week.